Welcome to the South Shore's Morning News Weekend Review Podcast. I'm Rob Hackelall. Listen for the next 30 minutes as we take a look back at some of the big interviews from the week on the South Shore's Morning News, which airs live weekdays from 5 to 10 a.m. South Shore's Morning News continues. I'm Rob Hackela, and it's time now for our Tech Talk segment. Every week, we talk with David Snell from AxSmart IT in Wareham. David, good morning.
Hey, good morning to you, Rob.
Here we are another week, and looks like we've got another breach to discuss.
Yes, hot on the heels of LastPass's breach that we talked about last week. Another consumer protection agency, supposed to be protecting you and your life and everything, NortonLifeLock, has announced that thousands of customers' accounts have been breached.
Oh, boy. NortonLifeLock. Okay, now I have certainly heard this advertised quite a bit. In fact, on radio, you'd have a lot of people saying this was to protect your identity, I believe. NortonLifeLock.
Exactly right. Yep, and they also have, which I was not aware of because we don't use them, they also have a password manager.
Oh,
so,
okay.
You know, it's just a feature that they have. But the problem is now they're reporting that their account, the account accesses probably got username and password, last name, first name, phone number, and mailing address. But then for the folks who are using their password manager feature, they cannot rule out that the intruders did not access the customer's saved passwords. So here we go again.
Okay. So is this similar? Is this a different type of thing entirely?
The password manager part of this is similar to the LastPass breach.
Okay.
Where if you've got passwords that someone else has found those out now, whether it's confirmed or not, they cannot confirm that it didn't happen. So it's time to change all those passwords.
All right. So this would be about just changing passwords in general. Does it affect anything else in terms of the LifeLock with the identity theft? I mean, I imagine the reason that you would normally use the services would be that you're scared of people taking things off the internet. I thought that was the whole idea behind the company.
Exactly. So what they do have a lot of personal information of the folks that have LifeLock accounts and the accounts that were breached. So essentially, with just a little bit more information, they could, in fact, assume your identity, which is what NortonLifeLock is supposed to protect you from.
Wow. That's crazy. I guess I should probably talk to an attorney. I wonder, could there be lawsuits, I wonder, though, in a case where a company says it's going to do something for you, and it's the complete opposite, especially if you're paying for this.
Exactly. And this is just like LastPass, in most cases, was a pay-for account,
yeah.
Although there were some free accounts. You know, there are court cases now that are trying to be raised against LastPass, and I'm sure that the same will happen against NortonLifeLock. But if we all take the time to read the fine print, which we never do,
yeah,
there's probably a clause in there that makes it that they're not responsible for acts of terrorism. Or that's what this is actually considered, is an act of terrorism.
Act of terrorism gets you out of there. Okay, yeah, you just say you go to the garage, not responsible for any lost cash or anything like that, and you say, well, wait a minute, I'm parking in your garage, you know, but there's no safety there. But yeah, I suppose, you know, I guess the thing is, you know, I could have my identity stolen for free, let alone pay a company and then get my identity stolen. But I guess you're right. I mean, you can't guarantee against everything, really. But maybe using these things, it's safer than not. I don't know. That's really up to the companies, and I guess you'd have to look into that. But if anybody listening is a customer of NortonLifeLock, what would you suggest they look into?
I'm going to suggest that if they haven't heard from NortonLifeLock saying that they were, in fact, breached, I wouldn't take that as gospel. I would certainly go in and change all my passwords that I had saved there, and then I would consider another protection type of service. So, look, you know, password managers are still widely recommended by security professionals for generating and storing unique passwords. But the one thing that we always thought sounded like a broken record, it's so long as you take the appropriate precautions are put in place, which appropriate precautions are, in fact, two-factor authentication. That's the next step everyone needs to do, and unfortunately, most are not doing it.
Yeah, I know you know, oftentimes, well, at least here when I use the login for my company email, I see that it's been updated. So that's good when I log on to the Outlook office or whatever from wherever I'm at home now, and it just texts me the code. And it's the same with some other things that I have. And that seems to work out pretty well.
It is that next step of security for all of us. If, in fact, someone does get your password, like they could have with LifeLock, if you have two-factor authentication set up on all of those websites that you access, they can't get that second factor, so they can't get in and cause any mischief.
Okay. So best advice, David, is just to continue to just change your passwords without anyone telling you you need to. Really?
Exactly right. Yeah. Change your passwords on a regular basis, but also enable two-factor authentication anywhere that you possibly can. A little time today is going to save us all a whole world of trouble tomorrow.
All right. So, David.
Are you there?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I don't know. I was someone. So, if people need to find out more, I guess the best thing is to go and to read the blog for more information there. It sounded like my. Not my identity, but my voice was being stolen. But okay, here I am. Where do people need to go, David?
So folks can go to my website, actsmartit.com. Click on my blog link. I talk about the four major two-factor authentication processes that are available today, what's good and bad about each of them, as well as a link to multi-factor authentication. Take a look at the cheat sheet. It gives you more information than you probably ever want, but it's all good information. Let's all get on the bandwagon and enable two-factor authentication for everything.
All right, AxSmartIT.com, AxSmartIT.com. That's David Snell at AxSmartIT in Wareham. Thank you, David.
Thank you, Rob.
And yes, we have two special guests in studio with us today, as promised. Carrie Carafoli is in studio, and Lee Lopes, they are with Jordan Hospital Club, jordanhospitalclub.org, supporting our community hospital since 1906. And Carrie and Lee are back in studio. In fact, Carrie's been on they've both been on the broadcast before, but Carrie has local ties growing up, I believe, in Marshfield, and we had her on as a guest co-host for an entire program. She's excited to come back and do that again. And
yes.
We're hoping you can tell your employer that you're working from home, but you'll be here doing a radio show. I'm not sure if you can get away with that. But
why not?
Well, welcome back, both
Thank
of you. Good
you.
To see you.
Thanks.
And
nice to see you again.
So another year here. So let's talk about, first of all, what the Jordan Hospital Club is all about and what you guys do.
So we're a group of all women. The club was founded in 1906, so it's got some roots, as you already said. But we just primarily fundraise for the Jordan Hospital Club, which is now BID Plymouth, through various fundraisers and just supporting our community.
All right. So again, as you talked about, this is volunteers, and you're again raising funds which support what the hospital does. And the signature events include the Duxbury Lawn Party, which sounds interesting, and we could get to that. But today we're talking about the other big fundraiser, which is the Polar Plunge, one of your signature events. So that's coming up, at the end of the month?
No, it's actually the beginning of March. The Polar Plunge itself is March 4th. Our kickoffs, to it is the flannels and flatbreads, and that's taking place at the end of the month.
Okay, all right. That's why you guys wanted to come in now.
That's exactly. Tuesday, January 31st.
Okay, so nobody's plunging yet until March. Oh, okay, so it's not in January. All right, so that's good. So there's some time then.
Yes. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
So we have our kickoff party, which is the flannels and flatbreads. That's on Tuesday, January 31st, where we invite all key sponsors, supporters, new members, anyone that wants to get involved in the plunge, friends of the Jordan Hospital Club. We invite them down to UVA.
Yes, Katie Thayer is going to host our event again for us at UVA Wine, and we'll have flatbreads available, a nice charcuterie board, and we will also have folks on hand from our membership team so we can talk with potential new members to come help us volunteer. We're always looking for new people to join the group. Many Hands Makes Light Work. And then we also will have a number of previous plungers and donors there to help discuss where the funds do go from all of our initiatives. We do focus on primarily the major initiatives at the hospital going forward. And one of them, obviously, for the flannel and flatbreads and Polar Plunge is supporting the cancer center. Recently, actually, the hospital has opened the breast care center, and we were able to help support and fund one of the mammography rooms, and that is a huge initiative that is welcomed in our community overall. And not only those events are areas of support, but we have other areas that we've donated to. Carrie, you have the list of those.
So it is, like you said, the breast center, but also the cardiovascular center, the birthplace, and the cardio rehabilitation center as well. So that's where all the money that we raise from the plunge, that's where 100% of it goes back into the hospital and the community. And also it supports the patient's assistance fund, which is something that...
So basically what the Patient Assistance Fund focuses on is families that have someone in treatment or in care at the hospital locally might need different assistance as far as fuel assistance, gas cards, paying, you know,
medication
or gas bill. I already said that, but like an electricity bill and just giving them the option so that they can, you know, pick up their prescriptions and still pay their, you know, oil bill and keep everything running. So that is a huge focus of the donations for us to support that cause. And just the overall community involvement for the plunge this year is growing, which is so nice. We have a lot of teams from the different schools locally that are participating now. And we're really opening it. It doesn't have to be just Plymouth residents because obviously the hospital supports us all, you know,
in the South Shore.
And so that's growing. So flannel and flatbread will be a fun evening, and a thank you to everyone who's participated in just a night to just hear more about what we do and how we give back and how they can, you know, other folks can potentially join and support us.
Oh, that's great. Flannels and flatbreads. Okay, so that's Tuesday, January 31st, and it says 5 to 8.
Yes, it's like an open house.
So I can anyone can come.
Yeah, come on down, have a glass of wine.
All are welcome.
Okay.
And just
you got to wear your flannel.
You have to pick out your favorite flannel.
Oh,
and
okay.
Come support us. Jordan the Bear will be there.
Oh, good.
And we'll have
okay.
some live music. Rudy and Christine Sampson have donated their time to, you know, play some tunes for us.
Yeah.
And it's just a nice, easy, relaxing community event. And you can meet a lot of the folks that do a lot of good in the community and just make a difference.
Well, yeah, I was seeing here in the website it says that last year was it over $90,000?
Yes, yeah. So last year was the 20th.
Yeah.
So we really kind of pushed for a big year last year, but it was so great. The vibe of the day, like the party after at the Plymouth Yacht Club, it was just... a super, super fun, positive, just high vibe day. It was also very, you know, for March, it was a very sort of warm, sunny day also. So we're kind of hoping for a nice, warm, sunny day as well.
I mean, nobody
but
wants it to be snowing.
No. But so this is the 21st year, but we still want to continue with that.
The momentum,
yeah. Because
it
was
going.
It was
like
really...
we've donated over $1.4 million.
$1.4 million?
From the Polar Plunge itself.
Yeah.
The ladies that have started this you know, 21 years ago, they're still at it. And it's a huge initiative.
I think we should give everybody a round of applause for that.
Catherine McKenna,
That's an amazing figure.
It's amazing. And it really keeps us really focused on why we do what we do.
Yeah. And it really is about the community coming together.
It's nice.
You know, this is an important thing that you do. And you talked about all the where the money goes and all the types of things that it does help. Can you tell, is Carrie and Lee, was there a specific reason why you guys got involved and why it's so important to one of you? Why do you continue to do this every year? Why is it so important to you guys?
Because, you know, once you're involved and you see firsthand what your efforts are doing and the differences they're making and the contributions that are had, it's contagious, kind of. I mean, it's become a very important thing to me in my life. Also, my kids are getting older, so I have more free time on my hands that, you know, I'm not spending my evenings on a soccer or a softball field all the time necessarily anymore. So I have more time to, you know, give back
to
my community. And I want to, you know, I want to do something that's impactful. And I think that the Jordan Hospital Club has a very long heritage, you know, dating back over 120 almost 120 years.
But giving back is something that you don't just think about it, you just do it. And so when you do these little things by helping volunteer, like one year I volunteered to help do the food at the Polar Plunge. Mm-hmm. Before, we have like a nice setup for breakfast items for all the plungers. And you see people coming in, and it just, like, it warms your heart, not to sound corny, but it really does. Like, there's families and folks that have supported this organization for so many years. It just, you leave there with, like, a renewed, fresh sense of, like, really what's important each day.
Yeah.
And so I chose to become part of the group for my personal needs of wanting to give back, but also to be a great role model for my children. I have one in high school and one in college, and I've made them get into the polar bear costume, and they have to saunter around Nelson Park. And,
wow.
And you know what? They you know, at first they're like,
that bear?
I'm not doing that. And then they do it, and they say to me, Mom, that was actually really not that bad. That was fun. And so it's just being altruistic and making sure people and my family know how to give back and be thankful for that, you know, our health overall.
Oh boy. Wow. Well, thanks both of you for coming in today. This is great. And so JordanHospitalClub.org is the website. And again, we're hoping at this point, we've got the plunge itself is in March now, March 4th.
Yes, March 4th. So they can go to the website and register. Registration is open. You'll just go to JordanHospitalClub.org, click on the polar plunge, you'll click the register. You can register as a team or individual, and then you'll get your own link, you know, that you can post to social media, email, text out, et cetera, so you can get donations. And what I just wanted to mention is that people think, you know, I got to get the $100 donations, et cetera. And last year I plunged and I had several, I know. That's a whole nother
We'll talk about that again. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But, you know, you really build up your donations with $5, $10, $15, which just goes to show that every dollar counts. And so these $5, $10 donations, that is what has comprised the $1.4 million. Mm-hmm. So
every dollar
I think
does.
That's tremendous.
It does. It really does. And
makes a difference.
One of the biggest things that we want to share is it's not the amount, it's just the support. And it can be a couple dollars. We have children that come with like their money out of their piggy bank that they want to donate, and it's $20, and it's so welcomed.
It adds up.
And so, it's priceless.
Well, and we're hoping to get a great kickoff at the Flannels and Flatbreads event.
Yes,
you'd
all
like
are
for
welcome.
That to be really heavily attended Tuesday, January 31st, and that's from 5 to 8. You can stop in at any time, and that's at on Main Street in Plymouth?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Katie Thayer owns the Uva Wine Bar.
Wine Bar.
Yes, it's great. It's got a great atmosphere, fun vibe, and she's a huge supporter of the club and all of our initiatives as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wonderful. Well, it's been great to see you guys both. That's
Terry
Tarafoli and Lee Lopes.
Yay.
And,
thank you. Thank you for having us. JordanHospital.org.
Welcome to Substance Free 02043. I'm your host, Kristen Arut, and I am program director for Hingham Cares.
Oh, new podcast out from Hingham Cares, and you're hearing a little bit of that audio. And we're going to talk about that this morning. Kristen Arut is in studio this morning. She is the president and program director with Hingham Cares at hinghamcares.org. Kristen, good morning.
Good morning, Rob.
Thanks for coming in here to WATD. Tell us about Hingham Cares and what the group is all about. You were explaining a bit about the history to me, but explain it for those that may not know what your group is all about.
Sure. So we are a substance Prevention Coalition. Our mission is to reduce substance use among youth in our community. We were established in 2017, a spinoff from the Towns Coalition, which was originally called the Substance Abuse Prevention Coalition. In 2018, we achieved our nonprofit status. 2019, we applied for a drug-free communities grant, and in 2020, we applied a second time, and we were awarded that grant. So we've been operating as a federally funded coalition since then.
Hingham Cares, Community Action Resources Education Support. And the mission, as you said, to reduce substance use among youth in our community. So there is a new podcast. We're going to talk about that. What are some of the other types of activities and things that you've done previously? And then we'll get to the podcast component, which is new.
It is new. We're very excited about it. So COVID created a little bit of a hiccup for us, and the podcast is a spinoff from a video component that we added to our programming. So I interviewed some guests. I created short videos, 10 minutes in length, and that was our series of Take 10 videos. Mm-hmm. But in-person events, we've just started doing a monthly program for kids. And we've been working with local businesses to provide things like art classes, yoga classes, fitness classes, and those have really taken off. That's been really exciting.
So when did the podcast officially start, Kristen?
The podcast officially launched in December, so okay. It's very new.
Oh, wow. Okay. And now I've gone online to hinghamcares.org, and I know people probably can get this on wherever they get their podcasts.
Yes.
But there are already just a few episodes already there.
Yes. So far, we have released episodes talking with parents who've lost children to substance abuse, a doctor whose specialty is in addiction medicine. He's the head of addiction medicine for South Shore Health in Weymouth, the health coordinator within the Hingham Public Schools, who also runs the health program at the high school, and she has a prevention component to her curriculum, and students at Hingham High School who run the SAD program. And SAD used to stand for Students Against Drunk Driving. It now stands for Students Against Destructive Decisions.
Okay. And how often do you, as they say, right, drop a new episode?
We drop a new episode every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks, okay.
So we just released one yesterday.
Okay, and people can go and listen. And about how long are they?
They range in length from 20 minutes to 50 minutes.
Okay, and the great thing about this is, you know, with the audio on demand, you can go and kind of take this in when you want. As you
exactly.
talked about, obviously in-person events are very important. But then with COVID, it was great to reach people in a different way. And then now this is something you hope to maybe reach people that potentially this information is good for anyone to hear.
Absolutely. You know, our mission is to reduce substance use in our community, but that doesn't mean simply targeting youth. It means educating parents, educating the community at large about the dangers of underage substance use.
Yeah. And this is not just a Hingham-only issue.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
No. I mean, every community has their own unique issues, for sure. And there are lots of communities here on the South Shore that have their own coalitions. And they address things within their community on their own, as we do in Hingham. One of the important things that we had to tap into was the data that's provided by the health teacher at the high school. She conducts the youth risk behavior survey every couple of years. And we had to utilize that data to really hone in on what the two substances of a concern were in our community when we were applying for the grant. So that data has been very useful for us in, you know, just sort of giving us our mission, not just giving us our mission, but also kind of substantiating the work that we do.
What are some of the things that we're seeing in the youth or in schools or in towns today, Kristen? What is the data showing you in terms of things that, you know, especially if I'm a parent, I should be concerned about? You know, maybe I've got kids that are going to be growing up. We get nervous about what's ahead. What are we seeing out there right now?
Well, vaping is obviously an issue. It's something that lots of programs nationwide have been pushing back on because there are definite health risks associated with vaping.
Yeah.
But vaping is simply the tool that's used to vape substances. So marijuana is something that we're concerned about right now. The podcast that was just released yesterday is an interview with a mom who lives in Colorado, and she lost her son due to his addiction to high-potency marijuana. Mm. Marijuana was legalized for recreational use in Colorado in 2014. It was legalized here in 2016. Yeah. And so we're starting to see within the health system some of the issues, kids coming in with chronic vomiting syndrome, which is linked directly mm-hmm. to abuse of marijuana products.
Yeah.
So...
That's a big one, then. Vaping substances, I imagine. Alcohol has always been with us.
Alcohol has always been an issue, yes.
It's so sad. You know, we always hear, as you talked about with SAD originally starting, you would always usually have the end of the school year come, and it would be very, very sad. And over the years, to hear about someone that ends up passing away before graduation in a car crash
yes.
due to alcohol. And that's, I know many towns were affected by that. That's something that I think over the years, I feel that we've gotten better at doing that, making kids know about, you know, not getting in cars and other rules about kids not driving together at such a young age.
Absolutely. And actually, the data in Hingham shows that kids are making very smart choices when it comes to that. They're not getting in cars with people who have been using substances behind the wheel.
Yeah.
And they're not driving after using substances either. But the two areas of concern in Hingham are mm-hmm. binge drinking. Our binge drinking numbers among our youth are off the charts. And parents hosting parties and providing alcohol to kids.
Yeah.
So it's more than just driving. Driving certainly is a danger. And we have done a great job as a community in educating parents and kids about the dangers of that. But the addictive nature of substances is really the driving force behind our message, because if kids start using a substance at a young age, mm-hmm. their proclivity to becoming addicted to that substance is significantly higher. So we want parents to push off providing substances to their kids for as long as they can.
Yeah. Yeah, we know that there can be permanent changes to the brain,
yep.
and those type of pathways can cause problems for the rest of your life, as you talked about. And you'd hate for your kid to go down that kind of road, especially if you could do something about it. I've always been, you know, often wondered, Kristen, why some parents feel that it's okay. I mean, I imagine from the point of view, are they thinking that somehow they can be the one to provide a safe experience somehow? Well, I mean, unfortunately, I guess that's why we've had to make these laws to try to go after these, you know, the accountability when it comes to hosting a party.
The social host law.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. I mean, parents, no parent wants their child to be placed in harm's way. Nobody wants their kids to be engaged in risky behavior. So I think it really boils down to a lack of education on the part of the parents and not really fully understanding the risks that are associated, the multitude of risks that are associated with providing kids with substances. So there's the rite of passage mentality. Oh, all kids do it. And then certainly there is that, well, they're going to be safe in my basement mentality mm-hmm. as well. Parents, I know, want to have their kids experience alcohol at home before going off to college. That's another thing that we've heard as well. But it really, you know, the longer that we can put kids off and the more that we can encourage them to engage in healthy activities on weekends and things like that, the better off our youth will be.
All right. Kristen Arute's been with us today. A lot of topics to get into, and I imagine those are going to come up on the podcast.
Yes.
As we've always talked about, there are problems and things that have been with us throughout history, and then there's always what's around the corner. What's next, Kristen? You know, what are the things that are in the future that parents need to be concerned about? So those are the kind of things you get into every couple of weeks on the podcast, right?
Absolutely. So the next couple of episodes that will be released, one is an interview with a comedian who's in recovery, and she uses her experience in recovery in her act. And then I also had the privilege of interviewing the founder of the very first recovery high school here in Massachusetts.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, we'll be looking for that. Kristen Arute, President and Program Director of Hingham Cares. You can find out more at hinghamcares.org. And the podcast is Substance Free 02043.
Yes.
All right. Kristen, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you, Rob. I appreciate it.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. As always, you can find us on your radio at 95.9 FM, mornings from 5 to 10, or online at 95.9watd.com.
And you can catch up with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can get the links at 95.9watd.com/SS Morning News. And join us next week for another edition of the South Shore's Morning News Week in Review.